Welcome to the Dark Mark Show, everybody. I was going to cue up the theme song, but sorry we're a little bit late. We had the show before us ran a little long, and we couldn't get some parking. My name is Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Right here, of course.
Hannah Bach, hello.
Hannah Bach, my lovely co-host. Can you see yourself?
A little bit. I can see my forehead.
No, you're lifting it too high. They're lower, lower.
Is that all right? Lower?
Yeah,
lower. Lower,
lower, lower. Much lower.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God, much
lower. There you are. Hi, Hannah. So how was being a co-host for a week?
It was fun. You know, I was really nervous, but I'm back, and I'm not going to be Elsie.
Everybody is raving about you.
That's very sweet. Thank you. And thank you to all my friends that tuned in and gave me great feedback.
So. Oh, yes. Yeah, so and actually, it was a weird show because you've known Josie Cadd and Nicole Six for a long time. You don't know these two, but we've become fast friends.
Yes, yes, we have.
Johnny too?
Yeah.
Well, she hasn't pointed at me before the night. So.
I'm trying to see if I can put this down so I can see both Johnny and Sin Fisted.
Sin Twisted.
Did I just call you Sin Fisted?
Yeah, you did.
I did.
If you just tilt it.
There it is, right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, our guest here on the left. You know her. You may mess up her name like I did. Formerly Sin Fisted.
Everybody messes up.
Now Sin Twisted. The most interesting person in the world. Dancer, actress, contortionist, cosplayer. All sort. You're such a multi-hyphenate. I can go on and on and on.
Just a weirdo.
And we love that. Next to you is another weirdo. We love him, though. No. This is the lead singer of Human Drama. Still human. We're going
to
talk about all that.
Beautiful.
And
beautiful. Nice
Sounds of the
here.
Blue Heart.
Yep.
This is Johnny and Davina.
Hi.
Johnny, goth legend. Now, I referred to you as a goth legend when I posted.
If you live enough years and continue to put yourself and everybody, I guess you just become a legend. It's just one of those things.
Do you think you're a goth legend?
Well, I think in Mexico that might work. I would never refer to myself as that, but nice to be a part of it, right?
Now, does the goth label bother you? Because about every person that is referred to as goth doesn't like it.
And what do they say? What is their explanation for not liking it?
Well, I had David Jay, and by the way, I'm going to ask you something I asked him, too. Are you a vampire?
No, I watch football every Sunday. I don't know.
Because you don't age.
Oh, I don't age.
You don't age.
He was leading to the compliment. Well, thank you. You're very sweet.
The hair is always on point.
Beautiful for me tonight, let me tell you.
I was
bathroom lighting, not so good.
No. I was looking at pictures of you from like 1989.
Wow.
And you didn't have the beard.
No, I didn't.
And the hair was a different color.
Yeah.
But you look exactly the same.
Well, you're very sweet. Very sweet. Thank you. I don't. I'm Italian. I've kept my hair.
Paisan.
Yeah. So
jeans, are you part Italian, Sin? You got so many different things mixed in.
Yeah, I actually am.
Paisana.
I think I'm like 18% Italian.
Hannah?
I'm a little bit Italian as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's an all Italian show tonight.
I'm probably like.
We have a theme.
This much Italian.
Yeah.
Just like bicep down.
That's good. Now, John, when I talked to David Jay, he said. He's like, it's fine, but it's limiting because he's done so many different types of music, and so have you.
You know, I never wrote for a gothic crowd. I just wrote what I felt and recorded it the way that it seemed to make sense, and the goth crowd picked up on it.
Yeah.
And, but to think that myself or David or any of the bands that you probably interview from that world that are accepted into that world, we don't write for that. That's totally incorrect. Couldn't do that. In fact,
after you got the following,
I believe the audience could spot it a mile away.
Really?
I think they would see us as frauds if we wrote for them. We write for ourselves. We do it the way it feels right to us, and we present it. And God bless whoever listens to it.
Right, right.
Anybody who listens to it.
So you don't mind that the goth crowd picked up on it?
Oh, I don't mind any human that listens to my stuff and it makes them feel good or they feel like it's got to be a part of their life. I mean, that's why I did music. I had Bowie and Dylan and God knows Lou Reed, T-Rex, all those things when I was a kid. And it helped form me into
Roxy Music, I'm guessing, too.
Roxy Music, yeah. Mott the Hoople, keep it going. You know?
Right, very glam.
Yeah, so I just always wanted to be that to someone else. That was my only goal, you know?
Well, I think you've succeeded. Let me go back. Honestly, I was very excited to have you, and I was telling.
And then you realized you called the wrong guy.
No. I was telling Hannah and Sin and Trevor, our engineer, and it's like, wow, we got Johnny from Human Drama. They're like, who? So let's go back.
That's hurtful.
Let's go. No. The reason I say that, but I want people to understand who you are.
Okay.
And what you've done.
Okay.
First, you're born in New Orleans. Correct?
I was 1957. I'm 60 years old.
Wow.
Born in New Orleans. Lived there for 27 years. Still my favorite city. And
me too.
Very proud of it.
You just got taken aback.
The age thing.
That's
but
what I'm
same
saying.
Same with me. Like people think I'm younger than I am, and I just turned 38. So
you both look really young. Great.
So when you said that, I was like, holy shit. Okay.
I've never hidden. In fact, RCA, one of the things that they talked to me about doing when we got signed in '88 was they thought they couldn't sell my age, so they wanted to put me back in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely refused.
Right.
How pretentious and ridiculous was that?
Right.
How about you promote my record and don't worry so much about my age? I'm okay.
I'm
in good health. I'm in good shape, so don't worry about it.
Now, do you come from a musical family?
No, not at all. Although I used to enjoy hearing my mother and her three sisters sing in a Baptist church.
Okay.
They did the four-part harmony and did the big church, church stuff. And I just remember looking and going, Mom can sing, you know, and she looks so pretty up there.
So there was musical talent, but not professional
music. And that was just, you know, some Sundays when I was very, very young that I remember that.
Like the Marsalises, the Connicks,
Indovinas.
Indovina, it's not plural.
I was saying
I don't think any kids are coming, so.
So when did you move to Los Angeles?
1985.
And you were in a band called, it was The Models?
We were called The Models.
So exactly. A great name.
You like the name? I came up with the name, and I always thought it was just stupid, you know?
It's
catchy. I thought it was putting a band together, like, and then we're The Models in the late 70s and 80s. Just,
well, it's very glam.
It's very pretentious.
Well, we're going to get your other band names are even more pretentious.
Wait, what other ones? Wait a minute. Human Drama's more pretentious?
And then if that was a pretentious
Sound
enough,
of the Blue
Sound
Hearts?
Sound of the Blue Hearts, which are slightly pretentious. I don't know. Am I wrong?
Can't wait till he gets to your part of the interview, but I'm a little... I hope that Human Drama wouldn't be pretentious to anybody but you. I hope that I found
It's a great name. Don't get me wrong.
But it seems kind of pretentious. Huh?
It's evocative.
Evocative is not pretentious. These sunglasses were a little pretentious. Let's not bullshit. But
yes.
But so evocative would be one of the reasons why I came up with that name.
Right.
I was looking for a concept that would allow anything I wrote about as a human man to be correct and under that umbrella.
So, and no matter what the gender, no matter what the race, we're all humans.
Yeah.
And we all have drama.
I got it.
Yes.
I got it. I found the right name, everybody.
And so when did you move to Los Angeles?
1985.
And then what I was reading, and it's funny because I am fascinated with two periods of rock and roll history in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah,
the punk scenes in the early 80s,
uh-huh.
X, Circle Jerks, Black Flag,
yes.
And the cheesy metal scene in the late 80s with, you know, the Poison and all
the
that
Gazzaris,
stuff. And but you're like in the middle, and you were part of the quote-unquote
Scream.
The Scream scene.
The Scream scene.
There was a club, and boy, I wish I was old enough. The Scream was this club, and listen to these bands that played this club regularly. Jane's Addiction, Guns N' Roses, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Human Drama.
Yep, along with Community FK, the Sea Hags, the Hangmen, Lions and Ghosts, one of the best bands of those days that nobody really has gotten to hear of. Just so many amazing bands. We were always fighting to match up. We just felt like, man, we can't. You know, we have got to get better. That made us so much better, so much more focused. When Community FK played,
you get inspired and then you want to level
you
up.
You have to. If they are on that stage and you want to be on that stage, you better make sure you fit.
Last year, I played the Convergence Festival in Dallas. Community FK played.
Oh, Patrick.
Still unbelievable live.
Yeah,
I was
one
so
of the
impressed.
Best singers ever.
Amazing. Yeah. And the guitar player, what's her name?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know her.
Oh, she's amazing. But the singers, I mean, they were just amazing.
Do you know I did a tour with them playing bass?
Oh, really?
With Patrick, yeah.
Oh, wow. When was this?
Geez, 95, 96, something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I actually played Convergence in Philadelphia back right. in 90, I don't know if it was 93 or 95, something like that.
So all these bands are duking it out. Now, how did you get in the scene?
In what scene?
The Scream scene. It seems like a very wide range of bands.
Yeah. There was a fellow we knew who managed a band called Broken Homes, and he knew Dale Glory. I can't remember his name. And he saw us at Club Lingerie and said, I have to introduce you guys to Dale. I really think you would be right for what she's doing for her type of club. And God bless her heart, she saw us at Club Lingerie, and next thing you know, we were opening for the Chili Peppers or whoever else, you know, it was coming around at that
time. And it seems like such a contrast in sounds.
Sure.
But it sounds like what a cool night.
It didn't.
To see Human Drama open for the Chili Peppers?
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
We had great bands, and the people were there to see great bands. It there was none of this not matching.
Right.
You know?
Because it seemed like the punk and the metal scenes, sort of like you have to fit this mold or that's it.
I think if you're going punk and metal, yeah, I doubt that you could squeeze a punk band on between two Gazzari's bands in the day.
Right.
But our stuff, it was all more alternative. It was not part of any mainstream.
Right.
It wasn't defined as punk.
Right.
You know, Jane's Addiction didn't have, you know, they weren't pigeonholed. They weren't called a certain type of band.
So, well, they had, I mean, their sound was varied and all, back in the, and you were on the same label as they were, the Triple X.
That's right. Exactly right. Yeah,
got signed about the same time.
We were about a year behind them.
Right.
They got signed to Triple X and then moved on to, I think, Warner's. We were signed to RCA and then to Triple X after RCA.
Right.
So we
right.
were a little.
You had a major label album.
Yeah, we were major label first and then indie after that.
Did it really cost $400,000 to produce?
$500,000 for my first album.
Wow.
Guess what my second album cost.
It was like $3,000 or something.
$5,000. And guess which album I'll be remembered for?
Hannah, do you want to take a guess?
$5,000.
It's such a great story. I love saying it because I forget about it sometimes. And it was such an important part of my life.
Right.
That time when I had to recover from, hey, you're not going to make it big, dude. RCA, you're not going to live on that label like Elvis and Bowie did for all those years. You're mm-hmm. done. So how do you recover? It made a man out of me.
Was that why you signed to RCA? Because of Bowie and
No, I signed to RCA because they came after us.
Right.
They came after us. And I love the A&R guy, Paul Atkinson, who played with the Zombies, one of my favorite English bands. Mm-hmm. He signed us to RCA. So, yeah, they came, and we said, by all means. And it was a little exciting to see Human Drama on the same little label that goes on the albums as my David Bowie.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Your label mates.
Yeah, we were label mates. Not quite, but almost. He was at EMI at that point. But anyway, My Ziggy Stardust has that label.
And so does
my Feel album.
Right.
So yeah, it's little things in life, right?
Can I ask you, what does $500,000 buy you?
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds good, but it doesn't.
A lot of people flying to South Wales, well, first flying into London and then going to Brighton and eating and
it's
consuming
a lot of coke too,
and traveling and a lot of whatever it was that we wanted. And then we recorded at one of the best studios in the world called Rockfield. And we had a producer that had just come off working with Echo and the Bunnymen.
Okay.
And some other people. Alison Moyet, I believe he worked with Ian Brody.
Yeah.
So we're paying.
You're very hot at the time.
Big at the time, let me tell you. And have a cute little story to tell you. It's an addendum to this. So that's where the money goes. You know, five people flown in, put up, rehearsed for 2 weeks. You learn when you go through something like that.
Hold off on that addendum because I want to hear it. But Sin Twisted is here. Now, last time we saw you, you were Sin Fisted.
Yeah.
Now you're Sin Twisted.
Yeah.
And I told you I liked the name change.
Yeah.
Because I've seen you twist.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Fist.
Okay, see, my previous stage name was because I was actually engaged to a guy named Three Fisted, and he was a drummer for a band. And so in the year of 2005, I won the Exotic Entertainer of the Year. I beat out girls from Las Vegas. Orange County, Los Angeles, and San Fernando Valley.
Okay.
And during this time, I didn't have boobs, and I had a foot-long mohawk.
Wow.
And my club, each club had to, I think, put in $300 to submit their best dancer.
Right.
It was like a thing, you know, like from all the clubs, just like, I want to be the club with the best dancer. And my boss had initially asked another performer, and she said yes, but then she got cold feet 24 hours prior, so he mm-hmm. asked me if I'd do it, and I said, I don't like doing contests because I never win. It's not based on your talent or your skill. I'm like, I could do it. I have lost to girls who got booed, okay? Seriously,
yeah,
I have lost to girls
feeling.
Who got booed, you know? So it's very frustrating, and I told my boss, you know, I was like, look, I'll only do it if it's actually based on talent and skill.
Mm-hmm.
And my boss is like, well, there's three judges, and two of them are women, and one is a homosexual male. And I was like, I'll do it. Because a lot of the people during that time at the club I was working at, a lot of people that would come to see me are women because they love the whole artistic everybody said Cirque du Soleil, Cirque du Soleil. Mm-hmm. That's what they compared my pole dancing and contortion skills.
Yeah.
And yeah. And depending on what music I was doing, like people just kind of get lost. I could catch people like this.
You've never
definitely.
Seen anything like it, Johnny.
And
I would have
cocktail waitresses come up to me and they're like, you realize I can't serve drinks when you're dancing. And I was like, why? And they're like, because every time I go up to a customer, they're like, just can you come back when she's done? Because they didn't want to be disturbed because they're just like stuck in it. Because normally girls are just kind of up there and they do, mm-hmm. I call it like the strippers on parade. And it's just very minimal.
Yeah.
But the girls who do very minimal on stage are usually the best hustlers. So I have made a theory, and I've only met one dancer who broke this theory, but
right.
Dancers can't hustle and hustlers can't dance. You're either one or the other, because most dancers I know, like amazing pole dancers and stage performers, can't hustle with a goddamn,
right.
just like myself, like a 2-for-1 lap dance, nobody wants that. But they'll throw all the money when I'm on the stage doing the thing, you know.
Because of the things that you can do with your body.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
One
well,
that's,
also,
that's still...
the, for me, it's all about, like, my whole thing is... more art, less porn. It's not about like me getting naked or anything. It's about like, how do you visually with your body show someone a song? And to me, that's through dance.
Mm-hmm.
So every little thing, when you watch me dance, every little sound that I hear is emphasized through my movements. Like even to I love
yeah.
it. I call it getting lost in the music because I don't even realize my body's it's just going. And,
I realize it.
My boss put me into this contest and I had won. And, after I'd won, a magazine company had hit me up. It's like the local exotic dance magazine. And they said, we want to, you know, put you on the cover and you do the whole interview and da-da-da. And all of their models previous, or dancers, I should say, had a first and last name. And at that time, I'd only been going by Sin.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, too, I'd have customers say, like, oh, are you the same Sin from this other club? I'm like, no, I'm the only Sin in Hollywood with a mohawk. So I was thinking about it, and I had recently gotten engaged, and I looked at my fiance at the time, and I was like, babe, what do you think about Sin Fisted? He's all, that sounds so fucking punk rock. And I was like, I like it too, right? I'm like, it just sounds so just like, blah, in your face.
Yeah.
Like, you're not gonna forget that name. So that's what I went by, and that's when I started doing that in 2005.
And why...
And
did you
so the thing is that probably 1 year after that, he and I had split.
Mm-hmm.
He cheated on me. We broke up, the whole thing. But the name had stuck already. I'd already rebranded myself from Sin to Sin Fisted with this. So I just let it slide. And years went by, and I realized a few years ago that it's almost been 10 years. And I don't feel like I was the same person I was back then. I was very, very hardcore, in your face, just, ah, fuck you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm more chilled and mellowed. And it's just like, even certain magazines wouldn't publish my name or my website because it sounds too pornographic. And, you know, and I get that. Even though I don't do porn, it's not like I'm against it or anything, but it's just something that a profession that I'm not interested in doing. And, it would prevent me from getting gigs because of the name. It just sounded the way people want to interpret it. They want to interpret it, you know? So I was toying with the idea. I'm like, how the fuck do I want to change it? I want to keep it, but I want to just
tweak it.
I want to twist it a little bit.
There you go.
So I was thinking, I started dabbling with Sin Twisted. I'm like, because I am a contortionist, but I do like very dark stuff when it comes to like my highest grossing month is October because of the fact that I do Living Dead Girl. I like to cover myself in blood and do, I like horror movies and I like that whole like makeup style and everything. Like, don't get me wrong, I like to be pretty and stuff, but I really like horror movies. And I think that like zombies covered in blood and vampires, oh, I love it. So
it's close enough that so not everybody's gonna know
because
it's you.
The, yeah, because of the contortion stuff, and just because, you know, like I said, I like not just your standard. Ah, I'm pretty. I want it to be like that's.
There's a double meaning there.
Yeah. So so I went with a rebrand a few years ago. Actually, about 2 years ago. I
know, and I messed up already.
No, that's right.
No, and trust me, Sin Twisted. It's better than I don't know if you're thinking about Sin Goldstein or Sin Johnson. It's just better. Speaking of horror movies, I just found out you went to
I was in Cambodia.
Cambodia, thank you. I almost said Singapore
actually,
again.
I want to say it was tomorrow will be 1 year ago I flew out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the movie?
It's a horror movie.
Or does it have a title?
For right now, they're going by Hex.
Okay.
Years ago, randomly performing at Bordello downtown, doing my grinder act for a burlesque show, of all things. Afterwards, I always do a meet and greet with people because, you know, I've been there when I've seen shows. I'm like, oh, I just want to go take a picture with them. So I do that. I like doing that. That's wonderful. I like talking and bullshitting like, yeah, let's have a drink. Let's talk. Let's take a picture, whatever. So this guy comes up to me and he's like, well, what's going on tonight? And I was like, oh, well, this is our burlesque show and we do a monthly installment here. And he's like, what were you doing with your... on your chest? And I was like, oh, it's called grindcore, and I wear metal on my body, and I use an angle grinder, and I shoot sparks off of power tools. And he's like, I actually didn't come here for the show. I came here because I'm scouting this location for a movie, and we're doing a club scene. And he's like, I want you in my movie. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah. So I got his information. Turns out it's the producer from the movie 8mm with Nicolas Cage.
Right.
So I came in, and I did two scenes for that. I did a grinder thing and then a contortion scene. And a year and a half later, there was like a small premiere and we saw it and my name was on the screen and it was really awesome to see. It was really fucking cool. Like, I was so stoked.
You're in 8mm?
No. This was called Dark Hearts.
Dark Hearts.
It's the producer. That's like his Rudolph is his kind of claim to fame would be the most recognizable one is 8mm.
Okay.
So years pass. And then last year, like last beginning of December, I get just a random out of the blue email from him. It's like been about like 6 or 7 years. And I haven't heard, you know, you do gigs and you move on. And I get an email from him. He's like, hey, just making sure this is still your email. If this is Sin, please reply back. I might have some work for you. And I was like, okay. I'm like, hey, yeah, it's me. What's up? And he's like, well, I'm shooting this movie, this horror movie, and I can't shoot it without you. And he's like, it's going to be take place in Cambodia. If you're interested and have a valid passport, it's during these times, these dates, give me a yes or no, and I could send over the script. And I was like, yeah. You know, so I had him send over the script. I didn't have any lines or anything like that, but just for a feel of, like, what was taking place and what my character was. And my character, I believe her name is Donya, and she's a demon entity that possesses this girl. And
typecasting.
And she also is like a shapeshifter. Mm-hmm. She has like she shapeshifts into this guy's girlfriend, but it's not her. And so I am the person in the motion track suit. So there's times where the girlfriend is interacting with the guy, and then we have to do a reshoot with me doing the same interaction with the guy. But the only time you know it's me is because I think about two different scenes, they have me stick my tongues out. Yeah. So
tongues,
like, yeah. Well, on my first day of set, I had a make out with the lead actor. And then after that scene, I had to make out with the lead actress.
Oh, sucks for her.
Because there's a, it didn't suck for me. It was awesome.
I'm
they're like,
kidding,
they're like, and cut. Okay. And roll back. Okay. Can we reshoot? I'm like, yes, please.
That's
hi.
The other thing that's hi. New is that. You had one tongue, now you have two.
Yeah.
You want to stick that out, or? Look at that, Johnny. Look at that, Hannah.
I see it. Look at that.
Wild.
And they kind of work independent of each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah. As if you couldn't get any hotter, any more desirable, any weirder, you split your tongue.
Yeah.
So they so did he know that he had a split tongue?
Yeah. Because when he mentioned it, he said a demon entity and things like that. And I was like, oh, I'm like, this is perfect. I'm like, I don't know if you knew. And I mentioned that. And he's like, that is awesome. So
and how was Cambodia?
Yeah. It was, oh my God, it was like life changing. It was like, really? It has really humbled me as a person. I'm just like, going there and coming back, I'm just like, I see everything. I'm like, it's petty. I'm
just
not going to get sucked
or,
up into your drama. It's fucking petty. Out there, it just seems like people have more respect for each other. And it's like walking back in time like 60 years. There's no such thing as organic because everything is organic. Everything's free range. Cows actually eat grass. Chickens and pigs run free. Dogs, there's no fences. Dogs roam free. They have their little homes, and then they wake up, and they run with their little pack, and they just, you know, it's just so incredible. And it is one of my favorite places to travel is actually poor countries. Mm-hmm. After living in Dubai for 3 months, which is a very, very rich country, and even the United States, I really find so much more beauty in poor countries. They really do have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. The children out there weren't all sucked up in cell phones, and they weren't all fucking bratty. I didn't hear one kid throw a tantrum in the mall or anywhere.
Respect for their elders
yeah,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a whole different thing, you know. And, you know, you'd be riding by, like, either in a tuk-tuk or on a moped or motorcycle, usually mopeds, but the kids are all playing outside. Everybody's happy. You know, it just, it's a different quality of life. And I was out there for 2 weeks and I came back very humbled and also realizing, I'm like, God, I stress about so much stuff.
Right.
And it's also part of my EDS, which is my genetic disorder that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Things that normally stress people out actually put us on a really higher, you know, I'm like, that's why I need to smoke some bud because it normals me out and levels me out because I do stress about a lot of stuff and I don't need to. And after especially coming back from there, like it's easier for me just to kind of take a whole different perspective and I'm just let it slide. It's bullshit. It's petty. Let it slide.
Which takes us back to Johnny's story where he had all the money and when you took it down to the bare bones, that's when you really succeeded.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the addendum to that story?
Oh, it was only good in the moment, but we had mentioned Ian Brody.
Right.
He was just about to start the Lightning Seed, which have all you know that's been a huge band for him.
Right.
And I actually designed his first single cover while in the studio doing my album.
Oh wow.
He didn't like his cover, so it would have worked at that
cool.
moment a little bit better.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question because one thing intrigued me. You said, you tell the story of the song with your body, and sometimes you don't know, even you're not aware of what it's doing. Are there any particular songs?
Hotel California.
There you go.
That's right. No, that's like a guaranteed for me,
that really,
especially that solo. I'm just like, oh, God. And when the song ends, I'm just like, I'm also asthmatic. So I'm like covered in sweat. I'm just like, oh, God, that was a good one.
So that would be number one.
That's like, to me, like one of my go-tos, like
great.
To get
What's
lost in music.
Oh,
it really depends. It really varies on my mood.
So you got
and
a number
really
one
varies.
And not really a strong number two.
For me, it really varies on, because right now the club that I work at is a jukebox, so we're very limited on our songs.
Right.
And
then
also we have to go by one credit, two credit, all that bullshit. You know,
I don't know what that means.
They have songs you put the money in, it goes by one credit, but then
the dancers pay
certain,
the money to the jukebox?
No. The bartender goes around and collects it and does the thing, but, you know, if there's a lot of dancers, they ask us to do just the one song credits.
Okay.
And that's only a short, limited amount of
And that's a pretty long
song,
too.
So it really, really varies. So for me, like, one of my fucking – I broke a pole dancing to Ministry Thieves.
Nice.
Oh, it was like a Saturday night, and I just like, so
ministry.
Amped. Yeah, I've broken 8 poles in my career. Like, ripped 7 of them out of the ceiling and 1 of them off the bottom.
That would have been a great video. Put that on YouTube.
Yeah, right?
I'm just worried about her getting hurt at this
point. Actually, thankfully, I didn't on any of – sorry, I'm knocking on wood right now – on any of them. But it really depends on my mood. If I'm – if I'm very like trancy or electronic, it could be anywhere from Beats Antique to Glitch Mob, even like old school Nine Inch Nails. It just really, really varies on my mood at the time. But for me, like a guaranteed go-to as far as like crowd-wise goes, because we do have younger people in our club and we do have older people in our club. So for me, my best, I go by who's there, and I'm like, okay, I look around, and if it's a bunch of young, if it's a bunch of younger dudes, I'm like, oh, I'm getting some corn on right now. But if it's a bunch of older people, it really, I adjust according to who's there. So for me, Hotel California is a good crowd pleaser for everybody, and it's a good for me about a 5 minute song, and that fucking solo, man, like that just like, ah, it gets me every time. Yeah. I love
solo.
It. Yeah.
Great solo.
Yeah.
So do you have any particular dancers you looked up to when you were younger before you got into dancing?
Like as far as like when I first started dancing or is just like what inspired me when I was a child?
Yeah, both. What inspired you?
For me, a lot of my inspiration came from rhythmic gymnastics. I was never in it, but I loved – these are things that I loved watching the Olympics. Was rhythm gymnastics and ice skating.
I loved ice
skating. So for me, when I first started exotic dancing and pole dancing, I was on a regular stationary pole. And then when I moved to LA after 3 years of dancing, I discovered poles on bearings. So the same dynamic in ice skating actually works for me when I'm pole dancing, because the tighter, the more you spread out, the slower you go, and as you're spinning, the tighter you go in, the fucking you fly, dude. You haul ass. So it's like, it's crazy how like little things like that, I had no idea any of that would kick into what I do for a living, but it actually does. And it's like things that I looked up to, and I've always loved watching circus performers, especially contortionists. And growing up, I always had, you know, double jointedness or hyper mobility, but I could never do like the legs or anything like that. I didn't start doing that until I first started dancing.
The legs, what is the legs?
I can put both my legs behind my head and shoulders.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you like Cirque du Soleil?
Huh?
You like Cirque du Soleil?
I didn't find out what people always compared me to that for years before I even saw. I finally ordered a video on eBay and watched it, and I was like, okay, I get it. It's artsy.
You've never
basically
seen one live, though, huh?
I've seen one live, and it was about 3 years ago.
Okay.
But it wasn't.
I love it.
I was expecting. I was expecting.
Going to Vegas and
everybody
going to
told
the
me they're like, I cried when I watched, and I was expecting to like
cry.
Be emotion, like moved by it.
I kept waiting for somebody to hurt themselves.
I was expecting to be moved by it, and I wasn't, but it could have been...
Because you know the technique, or...?
It could have been the show that I watched was... It was like a kind of weird variation of things, but I've seen different circuses like Cirque Berserk.
Right.
I fucking cried when I watched their fucking aerial list. I'm just like, oh, it's so beautiful, because everything, again, their movements to the music and the sound, they emphasize, and it's just drama. You know, it's drama. That's what it is. You're creating drama on stage with your body.
Right.
So if I'm mad or aggressive or whatever, and I play fucking Pantera, like 5 minutes alone is one of my fucking good go-to ones. I am like in your face, knee drops, slams, like very raw. But if I'm very, if I play Beats Antique, it's very kind of like different movements as I'm doing to the different sounds that's happening.
Well,
yeah,
I was going to say, there are things that you could do with your body that a lot of people can't.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, because I know myself, sometimes when I watch comedians, other people are laughing. I'm not laughing because I know the technique. I know what they're doing. It's still funny, and I admire what they're doing, but... It's not making me laugh like it's making somebody who doesn't know what they're doing laugh.
Yeah.
Like somebody does a callback, I know what they're doing. Is that the same thing with you when you see them dancing? Like it blows everybody away, but you're like, oh, they're just doing the leg thing, and I know how to do that.
Yes and no. I mean, I get inspired by a wide variety of different things.
Right.
Some of my favorite dancers, one of my favorite dancers I work with named Shay,
yeah.
She does absolutely no gymnastics type stuff on stage. Her whole thing... eye contact and I can't do I'm very, especially when I'm dancing, I never do. I have a hard time with eye contact with people in general, but especially when I'm dancing, I don't look at them. I look past them. I look through them, and a lot of times I have my hair in my face and I'm doing my movements. So her thing is she just kind of goes up there and she does her little strut, and then once she finds that one person connects eyes with, my favorite thing is watching the dynamic between her and that person, because that person gets their stuff, grabs their drink. They walk over, they sit at the stage, they start getting their money, and they start doing, they're just, and then once she has them, she's just super smiley and very flirty, and it's just body language, and I really think that's so inspiring because it's I can't do that.
I was going to tell you that you know who could do that is Johnny right here because I've seen him live. No. Stop. I've seen you live a few times. I actually saw the last, and I'm going to get it to the last human drama of the show, the first Sounds of the Blue Heart show, and then the reunion drama show. I actually saw they were all at Bar Sinister, if I recall. I saw you three times at Bar Sinister. Sure. What inspires you? How do you come from nothing to a song? And your songs are, extravagant. The ones that I like are the ones I've been listening to a lot of it this week. I've been listening to a lot with the strings.
What about the strings?
Some of the songs have just
The World Inside, the second album.
Absolutely.
It had to speak differently than the first album. It was a whisper. The World Inside, a whisper. Feel was a scream. That's my first two albums that I did. So, I, not wanting to repeat myself, I wrote a batch of songs that couldn't have been on Feel, so they had to be presented differently.
Right.
Which you'll know about. I mean, you have something slow, or you have the Pantera. You know, you have to interpret it. It would be stupid.
And I don't like to be labeled, but I get it when people do it. And I understand what you were saying as well earlier as far as being a categorized, typecast, labeled, whatever you want to call it. People come up to me like, you're like some goth chick or you're like a metal chick. I'm like, no, I'm just a human being who likes a wide variety of shit. I don't like pinpoint. I like music. There's a lot of music that I fucking love that I can't understand a goddamn thing they're saying because it's in another language, but it's so beautiful and it sings to my heart and it's just, to me, like, his question was very good because for me, dancing, there's no real wrong way to dance. As long as your body's moving,
you haven't seen me dance. There's wrong ways to dance.
No, it's the right way if it's quirky.
Have you seen
it?
Oh, it's quirky.
Dance.
I just picture it, and that's enough.
There's no wrong way to dance.
You also have a great style, though, on stage, your costumes and everything. You put yourself together
I've been
so well.
Doing this 20 close. Years, so it's not like it's happened within, like, a year or anything. And that's why when new people come into the club and they see new girls. I love new girls and I'll tell them, I'll give them all the pointers and everything and what to do, what not to do, where to practice, all the things.
Right.
And one of the things I tell them is, don't watch me on stage. Don't watch me on stage. Because what you see looks really fucking easy and it's not. And people who see it go up there, run, oh, I can do that. And it's like, no, honey, I've been doing this 20 years. Yeah. I didn't even hang upside down until 2 years into it because I was so scared of falling on my head. And this was back in 98 when there was no such thing as pole dance classes. YouTube didn't exist. So it's not like I could just look and have an instructor right there or landing mats or someone to like guide me. No, like this is like you do it. And you either stick it or you don't, you know? So I'd always tell them, never practice in front of an audience because then you'll be known as the girl who fell, you know? So
Johnny, how do you connect with the audience yourself? Now we're talking about that.
Yeah.
Because like I say, I've seen you three times, and if you're in a room, all eyes are on you for some reason. I mean, you're that charismatic, but are there subtle things you're doing on stage?
Well, I don't know if it's subtle because it goes back to what you talked about that other dancer doing. Those people paid to come see me play, and they have some type of passion for seeing me play, you know. And so what I try to do is, and it's an impossible goal, but you try to meet eyes for an important moment with as many people as you can.
Right.
You don't lean toward one person. I've never been that, oh, there's a cute girl, let me sing that. That's crap. So I, even at the Mexico City shows, when I can barely see faces in the back, I'm aiming.
Right.
Because I mean what I wrote in these songs. Nothing was for effect. This is real stuff that I felt, seen somebody else feel, or, you know, gone through myself or with somebody.
Right.
So I want them to know that they came to see the real thing.
Right.
There's no bullshit in what we do. There's no pretension except in the name.
What was your favorite country to play?
Mexico City.
Yeah.
Now you have such a big fan base.
I performed Halloween. There's past Halloween there. Down at Mexico City. I forget the name of the club, but it's my second year performing just in a small nightclub. I cannot remember the name.
Okay.
It's one of those. It's one of those. Literally, we fly in, we go to the gig, we do the gig, and then we fly out. And then I went to Miami the next. It's one of those. You kind of gets lost in the thing and shuffled in.
So,
but
yes.
Mexico City. They're amazing.
You have such a following in Mexico. You're probably bigger than the United States.
Way bigger.
Why do you think that is?
Because they listen. They don't care the way it's packaged or the way it's marketed. They hear it.
Yeah.
They listen. Their hearts are just beautiful hearts, you know. It's right. All about passion and heart. Yeah. And then they tell their friends. And that's exactly how it happened for me. They know the words. There's a couple of songs that
right.
I have to have my drummer really keep a steady beat because they're singing every word out of time.
Yeah.
Right.
However they feel like singing the song. Yeah. There's a couple of those. That as soon as we hit the first thing, it you know, they go. So they love my lyrics.
Because, Human Drama had a steady following, very much.
We've had two lives.
Right. You had a steady following in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
Successful on some level in the United States, mm-hmm. but huge in Mexico. It's you and Morrissey. What do you? Is there something
Isn't
going on
that
there?
Something? I know people in Mexico City who go, I can't believe we can lay claim to you and Morrissey, and it's like they put us right in there. I did a show with The Cure, and I can't believe we have Robert Smith and Johnny and Davina on the same stage.
Right.
The same. It's like wow, they just. Took us in to these people. We're now part of the pack, you know? And Morrissey is a huge one. Although, I don't know if I want to say it.
Say it.
I hardly ever say anything bad unless I have, it's affected me directly.
Yeah.
Right.
But I was disappointed. I'll put it this way. I was disappointed to hear some of the comments that some of the fans made regarding their treatment by Morrissey. I wasn't there. So, I feel like I'm gone. Wow, what a shame. How lucky are we that these people will arrive, buy a ticket, sit, stand, wait, sweaty, standing like this with people, and being smashed, let us know how much they love us and then to treat them in a way that they don't deem as...
Clearly, by what you're saying, you have had a lot of passionate talks with Mexican fans.
I connect with them as often as I can. I take trips down there just to go sit and have coffees.
Right.
We did a documentary that'll come out about me spending a week in Mexico City.
That's fantastic.
No advertisement. I just showed up and started playing my guitar, and it was an amazing.
Oh, that's great.
One of the best weeks of my life. We're so lucky if somebody buys our music, or buy
that's
the
how
tickets,
I exactly. That's how I feel when I perform, and that there's
how
people there, and
we?
They're all there, and I'm just like, I just want them to experience how this whole. One of my favorite things is the synergy you get, when the crowd is feeding
I
off
like
you,
that,
and then
the
you're
synergy.
Feeding off the crowd, and then it's that big, like just it's just this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
had,
one of my favorite
I
things. I get off stage,
yeah.
and my hands are just like
yeah.
this.
So
I'm just
you
like,
know it too. You know
no, when,
yeah,
when,
yeah,
when,
exactly
there, when there's a palpable buzz in the room. When you get off stage and there's still like your presence is still there in the room,
yeah,
it's amazing. Because I did a show, on Tuesday, just destroyed, and like for another 5 minutes, you could tell my energy and what I put out and what the crowd put out back to me was still in the room.
Yeah. Never take that for granted.
Yeah, actually, it's one of my favorite things. Yeah.
All three of you could actually probably answer this question. What's the craziest thing that ever happened when you guys were on stage performing?
I had two fights break out there while I was on stage.
What did you say?
I had nothing to do with me. It was a deaf comedy jam night at a white biker bar in San Diego, and I was the only white comic. So it was all well-dressed black people for the show and the regular biker crowd, and they wanted to hear me, and the biker crowd was just talking, and they're like, shut the fuck up. And then there's a fight, and then they kicked those guys out, and I got the crowd back.
Yeah.
Another 10, 15 minutes later, everybody's laughing, and then I hear, shut the fuck up, and another fight. So that's unfortunate, but yeah, that was crazy. Since probably got crazier than that.
I have a good one. And this is one of those things that I've been wanting to do for a while, like put a post up on Instagram and just like random fact number 254.
Yeah.
Probably one of the strangest things I had, I was doing a rave, performing grindcore, and I had a guy come up on stage, pull off his prosthetic leg, and hold it up, while I shot sparks on his stump.
That's awesome.
And I was thinking, I even caught myself in the moment going, how many people can say they've done this in their life?
And
like,
that's story.
So,
like,
it's so fucking random. And then I have another story of a guy who came up while I was on stage dancing, and he actually took off his leg and put it on the stage. And I actually put my leg behind my head and put his leg behind my head.
Johnny, what's the craziest thing that happened to you on stage?
I can't compete.
Not a competition.
There's got to be, you have to have a good
story.
I
made a critical error and jumped off the stage into the crowd at a festival in Mexico City.
And what happened when you jumped
mistake.
Off?
Huge mistake.
What happened? You got hurt? Yourself?
First of all, it was about 11, 12-foot stage. It was a lava pit.
Oh, my God.
So I jumped into the security fences
where the security was. Oh, no.
Thinking, in my mind, of course, I was jumping down to get closer to the people.
You were going
to
stage dive.
Really, the whole crowd, which was upwards of 10,000, pushed forward, pushing the fences, the security, and me, and the first few. Everyone under the stage.
Oh.
So I knew. As soon as I hit the ground and I saw the fences coming at me, I made an image.
I have of you jumping off and the whole crowd surging towards you.
And there are a couple of photos, just a couple that exist, of me in that crowd. But I'll tell you, physically, I was hurt. I was hurting when I got back. I couldn't reach the top of the stage. Now, I can jump. I can jump to so I barely got my hand on it. I was in much better shape than I was. All the security was gone. God. So I was on my own.
Oh my God.
They were so pissed at me. And it was a bad scene. Eventually, I climbed back up, but the band was just laughing at me. Because it's one of those things that you do, like lighting a firecracker with a sparkler. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good idea. And then you realize...
Right. Not a good idea.
This ain't working. I just did something pretty freaking stupid. Right. So that was what I felt, and I'll still have some people mention that to me, that they were at the show when I jumped, and they either got crushed or wasn't it cool. Depending on where they were. They got crushed.
They were further away.
Nobody got hurt.
That's great.
I had earrings, pulled out of my earrings. Some crotch damage. But I can't. But
not irreversible.
No. But those poor security people, I was not their friend.
Now, let me ask. This is something that I've been meaning to ask you. Now, I've met you a few times, but we never really talked at length. And that's
well, you stuck up, man.
Not style. I'm pretentious, but evocative.
I missed my opportunity.
But evocative. So I'm pretentious, but evocative.
Damn, I missed it. It was set up.
You're dealing with a professional, Johnny.
Gotcha.
No, but why did? In 2005, why did you break up Human Drama?
Didn't feel like I could do anything else at that moment in that particular situation.
Because you're the singer, you're the songwriter.
Yeah, I felt like I had just taken it everywhere that it could go. I felt a little almost limited by my own project. The next album, we had to be Human Drama, and I had nothing.
You evolved.
I needed to grow.
I needed to grow out
of that. Whether I did or didn't, I don't know. I've written some beautiful songs since Human
Drama. Well, I like Sounds of Blue Heart. I was listening to on your Human Drama Pandora station. Yeah. They played it was yesterday. What's the song? Yesterday's in the title.
The Arms of Yesterday.
Arms of Yesterday.
What a sad song.
That's a great song.
Well, thank you.
But it sounds very Human Drama-y. A bit.
Well, it is me.
Because it's your voice, and it has the strings, too.
I just do what I do. I just deal with a different batch of musicians. And on some of the later Human Drama albums, I was, and this is just was out of necessity, I was kind of really demoing these things and playing a lot of the stuff on it.
Right.
So for Sound of the Blue Heart, I decided I'm going to get some people, and they're going to come in as I write these songs, and they're going to do what they do. I'm not going to hey, guitar player, do the bass player, do this. I want string. It was like, let's get these people in and let's let them embellish, the core song.
This is something I've always wanted to ask singer-songwriters because, as you say, it's your songs, it's your voice. But it's something like, let me just use an example. It's not a goth example. It's not a metal example. But say, like, Sting.
Uh-huh.
He writes the songs for the Police.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason... his songs are better when the Police play them than when he does his own songs. Same guy, same voice, but there's just some sort of chemistry there.
Those three guys were magic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sometimes you get in a room and it works. The energy and what those guys bring, it just works.
Is that the same with Human Drama? Because I know you had a revolving...
You know what? I can't compare it to what happened with the Police because I didn't have the steady band in place for just about everybody left during The World Inside.
Right.
So I remember walking home from the last mix of The World Inside. I was by myself.
Right.
That's what it had come to. Because, you know, it was really heartbreaking for folks to be signed to RCA. You're taking your first step into this world you could only dream about.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's pulled from you.
Right.
And then you go back to your regular job. You know, you got, you know, marriages
break
up. And they all just, you know, came in and nicely told me, I just can't do it again, man. We did it once. So I had to kind of keep it afloat. So I've had many different people.
So the original band that was on the RCA label, they all left?
They left, and some have come back.
Okay. Well, that brings me to Human Drama's back.
We came back and did an album.
Yes.
And we're doing a show in Mexico City. I think it's getting announced here for the first time, April 21st.
At, wow.
The Blackberry Theater, Auditorium, whatever it is.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's
April 21st.
The Blackberry Auditorium. Well, how many pieces is that film?
2,000 maybe, something like
that.
Yeah,
it's a nice show. Nice size show.
It's a nice, beautiful venue, and looking forward to presenting the new album.
Right.
Along with other...
Is that what you gave me?
I did, yeah.
Hold on one second. Can
not
actually,
the vinyl.
Hannah, if you could...
Yeah, the little CD.
The
CD.
The CDs,
the
yeah.
CD.
Okay.
Not that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a.
Let's keep
yeah,
that
Johnny.
Big face.
That one's a good
yeah,
one.
Johnny
that
gave
off.
Me. He's like, wow, look at that. Look at that big face.
My face is
no,
too big.
No, this is. Okay. This is.
Broken Songs for
Broken,
broken
songs
People.
For broken
came
People.
Out on Fonarte Latino label.
Yeah, I was gonna say that you're signed to a Latin label now.
Yes, it's my third one.
So yeah. You're not on Project. You're not on Triple X.
I am on no U.S. label.
And it's just and.
I found
probably,
the label.
Probably better for it, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to beg somebody to release my album. You know, these folks wanted to, mm-hmm. and they're beautiful people, great businessmen, and everybody who wants my album in Mexico has it, and the folks in the States that want it can order it. So,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, with the streaming and Amazon, I trust me, I
What's
know about
word?
The streaming.
Streaming or is it
right? Well, what I'm saying.
Stealing.
Well, okay. Well, forgetting that.
I'm really burned up.
Forgetting that. On Amazon or iTunes, if they would like to purchase it,
please purchase
it's readily
songs.
Available.
And not just my songs. If you are a Tom Waits fan, if you're a Paul McCartney fan, no matter who it is, buy it.
Right.
If a friend gives it to you, and you like it, then buy it.
But it's not like in the 80s and 90s where something signed to a Latin label you couldn't get in the record store. Now you can buy it.
You can buy it.
You can buy it.
You can buy it.
So
and you should buy it. Even if you pay 79 cents for a
song.
I'm
sure it's well worth it.
Yeah, well, and I'm just introduced to your music just as recent, and you have a fantastic voice. It's very...
Very sweet. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love it.
It's cigarettes and coffee.
Is that the secret?
And an occasional gin.
So my question before, how do you come from nothing to a fully realized song? How does the songwriting process go?
Tom Waits.
You just listen to Tom Waits?
No. Tom Waits had the greatest quote about this, and I don't know that I'll get it exactly right, but they're like butterflies or birds, butterflies, I think, and they're flying past you, and you got to catch them while it's there because they're going to leave. You know, they're going
to
go.
I can relate to that.
So when an idea comes, and I have one I'll tell you a quick story about, when it comes, you have to respect that something is happening. And you have to focus and have discipline and capture it while it's there. I don't know if you know the first album, we had a song called The Waiting Hour.
Yes.
It's become one of Human Drama's biggest songs.
Yes.
In 1987, before we got our deals, we were still big in the clubs. We hadn't quite gotten there. I was walking down Santa Monica Boulevard, and I was walking, and in pace to my steps, something came out of my mouth, and I went... I know your heart is breaking. So I kept saying, I know you're... And I went, uh-oh. And I just turned around, and I went right back to the house and grabbed the guitar and found that first chord.
Yeah.
And in about an hour or less, I had the chorus. And it was, here it is. I got it.
Yeah.
And I was so intimidated by it that I didn't think I could write a verse to match it.
Right.
So I sat around that day fighting with that song, going, what is the verse? Because I think I've said everything I need to say in 40 seconds. So,
right.
You have to catch them when they come.
Right.
They will leave, man.
Is it usually lyrics or a melody? Or
lyrics
music?
And melody can kind of come at the same time for
okay.
me.
Have you ever been inspired by something you heard in a dream? There's been several times where I've heard songs in my dream that have never existed. Wow. And I wake up and I was just like, oh, it was so odd. Because I have work dreams where I'm dancing to music. So sometimes I hear the music and sometimes it's new music.
You're getting butterflies flying all around
but
you.
But when I wake up, I can't even. Yeah. But I wake up and it's already gone, you know. Yeah. But it's like, have you ever had a song come to
you? But I had a friend tell me that that's how he wrote one of what was his, Willie DeVille from Mink DeVille.
Mink DeVille, yeah.
Said he was dreaming the song Heaven Stood Still. And he woke up his wife in bed. He goes, and they walked over to the piano and he was fiddling with it. And
yeah, I've heard other musicians say that, but
they wrote the song that he was feeling and hearing in his dream. He went to the piano.
Because I've heard melodies and lyrics, but it's never existed before. Not that I've heard ever before.
I only hear car alarms when I sleep.
And I'm the type of person where just like even working in a club, I was just like, play that first track. I'll know within 2 seconds if that's the right song, and I could hear it by the first note. I'm like, no, that's not it. Skip to the next one. Okay, that one's it.
So do you have a signature move? Because he has like certain songs, you have a signature
There's a certain signature move, and depending on the song ending, if the song ends very dramatically, I do a contortion signature move. It's like I kind of lay on my side and I put my leg behind my head, and then I roll over into a split and sit up as the song stops.
Well, you brought everybody a little treat, didn't you?
I was going to say cosplay.
Where does the time go? But what I was going to say, now you're doing a lot of cosplaying.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know it was so big until I went to Las Vegas to a comic book convention. And the cosplayers were signing.
Yeah.
They were signing autographs. So girls that actually dress like Wonder Woman.
I've done that a few times. I've had a merch booth and stuff like that.
Right. That's so weird to me, but good for you.
I love it. I love doing it. Well, because it's kind of what I do for a living anyways. When people are like, what do you do for a living? I say I either play pretend for a living or I work for a circus. Because it's hard to describe what I do because I do weird, bizarre shit. It's not very standard pole dancing and grinder and all the things.
So do people, I mean, when you go to conventions, they're like, oh, Sin Twisted, I've seen you.
I've had people come up and like give me huge hugs and like, oh my God, I've always wanted to meet you. And people come up and like totally
because they saw you in a Harley Quinn outfit or a Catwoman outfit.
Recently I just debuted my Catwoman at Wizard World.
Right.
And
you always get into everything.
Yeah.
And so you learned how to
I learned how to crack my bullwhip because I didn't want to be a Catwoman who didn't know how to use her whip. I'm still learning in the process of so I'm not like being able to grab things and pull it back, but I can.
Can we see a little bit of it?
Yeah, you want to?
Oh yes,
I brought it.
Yes, this would be the big finale of the show.
Do I have to get out of the
way? No, you're good. I'll do it right here. Like,
okay.
Oh no, but the camera. You have to be.
We'll figure out the camera. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I'll figure out the camera.
Stuck on my own cell phone.
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go.
Like, I don't need a whole lot of space.
We do.
Yes.
Do we need to clear the table and everything?
No, you're good. Like, it's just right here. Like, you're totally good. Don't even worry about it. It's not like it's going over my head. Right now, so.
Okay, hold on.
I'm just going to do it to where you can just hear it. You're good. Don't worry.
Okay.
Okay.
Ooh.
It's all about
How do you do that?
It's all about when you pull it back, and once you pull forward, you want to create a loop. Once you create the loop and it travels through, that loop is actually breaking the speed of sound. So you're hearing a mini sonic boom. So you don't need to put all your weight into it. It's just as long as you can get that little loop, you can make a really good crack.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
That's what I'm saying. I don't need a whole lot of space. I just need like a good 4 foot. Thank you.
It was loud. The first two were crazy.
Yeah.
Right?
And when it happens, it's actually within 1 foot next to my ear, so I hear it a lot louder than everybody else does. But I've always been fascinated with bullets.
Pop like somebody like with the old towel in the shower.
Possibly. I know how to do overhand. And then down like that.
And
I'm actually better left-handed than I am right, even though I'm right-hand dominant.
Why do you think that is?
I have no idea. No clue.
Is this self-taught or did somebody...
No, I learned it from YouTube.
It's crazy what you learn from YouTube.
No, whenever people ask me, how do you do that? I'm like, fucking Google it, okay? I Googled it. How do you crack a whip? And it had a video. And this guy actually went step-by-step what I just told you. Once you pull it back and create that loop, then you pull it through and that... Craxit.
I was going to guess either that or Mexico City or Cambodia, but a lot of bullets in Mexico City. Where does the time go? What an amazing – we could talk for hours, but Johnny and Davina, you were a delight.
Thank you for having me. Nice meeting you.
I hope you had fun.
I had a blast. I love doing
the man who writes an album, Broken Songs for Broken People, I hope you had fun.
It is, my friend.
Seems like you could use it.
I will tell the truth.
No, you do. You do. And your music's terrific. Please, people, seek it out. Pay for it. And Human Drama's playing Mexico on April
21st in Mexico City, and hopefully some more dates to follow in Puebla, Guadalajara, Monterrey, etc.
All over Mexico.
We're hoping.
Maybe
we can get.
Any American L.A. shows, maybe?
I don't know. All right. Somebody wants me.
All right. Well, I
should have you come back and play a little song.
My number's listed. Oh, play a song.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, well, anytime. You have an open invitation.
Don't say that. Yeah. I'll just wait till next week.
Okay.
We'll come back.
All right. Yeah, you'll sit through all the nerdy
comics.
Shows. And Sin. And how do we get a hold of you? Just is there a website? Is there Human Drama? Is there a website?
Oh, wow. I guess my Facebook, right? That's
right.
Everybody, I don't know. Is there
Johnny and Davina?
Am I dating myself by saying Facebook? Is it something else?
No. If you said MySpace, that'd be one thing.
Johnny
but,
and Davina or Human Drama? Oh, MySpace.
Just Google Human Drama.
I
Johnny
didn't
and Davina.
Get it at first. I was like,
yeah.
So on Facebook, you guys can find me.
Absolutely.
Or you can find them tagged in your post.
Tagged in my post.
Yeah,
just look for Human Drama.
It's on Instagram as well.
And you'll be doing some speaking.